This is KAYT, Gina, Alexandria. This is Gospel Radio at its very best. 88.1. KAYT, praising the Lord.
This is BJ, and I would like to welcome you to our show, Just Stuff. This show is about ordinary people just like you, just like me, combining our efforts in a positive way to make our community better, one day at a time, through conversation, encouragement, resources, empowerment, and just plain talk. Remember, you are the best part of this show.
BJ with Just Stuff. And today, our emphasis is going to be on drug addiction and one man's story about abuse and recovery. Drug abuse always affects the user and the people around the user and family members in a negative way. There's nothing positive about drug abuse. There's nothing positive about drug abuse. It destroys. Drug abuse causes mental, physical, spiritual, mental changes of the user. There are so many avenues that we could travel in this discussion, and it can't all be done in 30 minutes. And there are so many young people, old people, middle-aged people who are using drugs in our own area. And sometimes we don't want to look to see things as they are if it doesn't affect us. But the enemy is trying to capture as many souls as he possibly can in whatever way he can. And this is our watch, believers. And if we see things going on, if there's any way that we can make a difference as believers, we should be doing that. If this interview can affect someone in a positive way, that's a start. Today, my guest is Robert Williams. This is a man who was at the bottom of the barrel, but God raised him up from nothing to something. And I hope that his experience will be an encouragement to someone to let them know that you can rise up. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Robert, I'd like you to take us on your journey of addiction and recovery to giving back to the community. When did your journey with drug addiction start?
Yes, ma'am, no problem. My drug addiction started when at a young age, around the age of six. I used to always, teen around with my brothers and sisters, I used to always sip alcohol, from my mama's cup and stuff like that, just teasing around and not thinking nothing of it. You know, I just wanted to feel the things they was doing, and I would always see my brothers and smoking a little weed or whatever. I go, let me go try this, see. And then that didn't really, I know I was going to start off like that, but it just started at a young age, so.
And became normal.
It became like a normal thing because that's all I saw. I mean, I didn't see anybody not getting high or not drinking.
And 6 years old is that's almost unimaginable.
That's what I saw. So that's what I was used to doing and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And it really progressed. I can remember when I was in junior high and, we used to all gather before we get on the bus and smoke a little marijuana. That's just everybody was doing it. So smoke a little weed, and then we'd go to the ball games and then we'd just all get together and start drinking. And
that was your same group?
The same group of people,
mm-hmm.
because it was from different neighborhoods, but we was all the same, around the same age.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think anything about it. It was just a normal thing. I think my turning point, I really feel in my heart what really happened with me personally was that, I love getting high.
Mm-hmm.
I love drinking.
And you like the way it made you feel?
It made me feel so different. So a part of. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I can do anything, I can say anything, and guess what? I can accomplish anything as long as I'm feeling that buzz.
Mm.
But once it come down, ooh, well, I still wanted more of it. So
that's what causes addiction to progress, because you get to a spot, but then you get to a point where you want more of that, like you were saying, that feeling.
That you start feeling good. I'm gonna tell you, my addiction had me doing things and going places that I never believed I could ever go in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It was just in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never went there.
Right.
I was still right out here. Right here on the corner, right on everybody else.
But my mind told me,
I'm here with. I'm like, I'm just lost. You know what I'm saying? But the thing about it is, you know, I'll never forget when I was just trying to, you know, be a part of my brother's life. And he had went to the Marines, and, you know, and he had went to Okinawa, Japan, and a typhoon hit. And him and another guy, the whole barracks at the bottom of the hill, and they had to actually run up the hill to get out through fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the ones survived. And they had took him to the hospital, and this was in 79.
Mm-hmm.
They had took him to the hospital, and he was burnt from head to toe.
Oh, man.
So by him being burnt head to toe, I was really, really, really drinking. Because my mom had to leave here. My older sister, she was taking care of us. The bills were still getting paid, all by God's grace. But she had 6 kids in one house. But she had to go sit tend to my brother. And when he came back home, it was 2 days after my birthday in 1980. I saw my brother, and I didn't see my brother. I mean, I saw a person in front of me that scared me. I mean, I'm like 16, 17 years old still, but it was my brother.
Mm-hmm.
What made me realize that was my brother was when he finally got a chance to leave the house a week later, and he put that weed in his mouth.
Oh, my.
I said, wow, he even went through fire, and he did this. He was like my Superman. Believe it or not, he said he even got burnt up head to toe, and the first thing he did, 2 weeks prior, on this guy's porch, smoked that weed. I was like, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to be like him. I want to be like my brother, and that led me straight into everything he did.
You did it.
That's what I want to do.
And you didn't realize that wasn't a positive. You knew that was your brother. And
that was my brother. He had suffered, and that's what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go down that road with whatever he do, I was going to do. And I was lost from that point.
Mm. So what are some of your regrets? And how did your addiction affect those who loved you?
I think one of my major regrets is when I graduated. Even though I went through high school, and one of my major regrets was when I walked across that stage, I was full of orange Jubilee.
What is that?
It's a wine. It's like a bottle. It was like a bottle. We used to call it like Mad Dog 2020. It's old alcohol. We used to buy it in like a little pint or filth. And I had this orange flavor, and it made you feel like you was on gin and juice, but with a twist.
Oh,
and I was so loaded because I got me 2/5 of that, and my family, none of them came to the graduation. And I graduated from Bolton High School.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I got 5 siblings,
mm-hmm.
and a mama and a daddy. Nobody came. So I felt like I was alone, but that bottle made me feel like I was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So I drunk that liquor, And I walked across the stage, and I picked my diploma up, and after I couldn't remember.
Oh, my.
I think I might have blacked out. You know, and I couldn't remember. I mean, but the next day, I was on a plane going to the Air Force.
My.
Loaded. I was loaded, and I was loaded. I had just smoked me a bag of weed. I had told myself I got me a plane. I got me some Tanqueray. I got me some Tanqueray and some vinegar.
What is that?
Green Tanqueray, it's alcohol. I tell you, I was so insane. I only drank Tanqueray on Sundays. But I drank it when I got on the plane because I figured it was gonna kill all the weed ass smoke. You know what I'm saying? So I remember, and I went and I got on the plane and I'm high. I'm already in the sky, I'm high twice. So I touched down on the base flight. I'm thinking, well, they gonna kick me out. They gonna kick me out, they gonna piss me in the cup. Oh, they made me stay in there. I touched down on the base, peed in the cup. The jury sergeant said, where you think you going? Well, I know if they go home, Pop, no, you ain't. See what it was. In high school, I was in ROTC. So when I got the basic, I already had 2 stripes. So I was a PA. I proficiency advanced. I didn't walk through basic training with everybody else. I advanced through it. That means that even though I was drunk and high, I advanced through basic by myself in 15 days. And normally it was 30 days.
Being high.
Being loaded. Still sneaking around trying to find me some liquor. You know, knowing I couldn't get none on the base. So I'm thinking, well, oh, I'm good now because I ain't drinking 15 days because it took me 15 days to get out. But when I got on that second plane and I went to Denver and I was over 350 people and I'm watching guys test for positive for weed and getting kicked out, my addiction still came with me. Came with me. Told my mind, you know what you ought to do? You ought to go back home. Don't go nowhere else. They got a base at the house. Ain't getting an Air Force base. You ought to go back home, man.
That's what your mind was telling you.
The whole time, you ought to go back home. They offered all these things to me, all these avenues. You go to California, you go to Florida, you go to Germany, you go wherever you want to go. Where would you want to go back home? Alexandria? Wow. Okay? And you just leave there? My addiction said, no, you ain't finished yet. And I came back home 2.5 years later, I was out. Because I couldn't stop smoking weed. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't stop coming out here in the Sunday quarters.
Because you had grown up with that from 6 years old.
Right. It was all in me. But that's the cold part about it. I'm still trying to figure out why this is going on. And I'm still a testing positive on the base. They still let me stay in. I'm going to correctional custody. Whatever they tell me, I still want to use. They offered me AA, NA.
So when did you realize, Robert, that you had had enough?
I'm going to tell you, this is honest to God truth. I got to a point to where, when I got into my addiction, and my brothers them were smoking crack with me, and I told them that ain't enough dope for me. They said, "What you mean all this dope is? That ain't enough." So I got to a point, I got to coming on this block, jacking, beating people for dope, getting my butt kicked every day, and it got to a point, at one point, I was just lost. My mama was listening, She would always call me in on every Tuesday because she worked for Picard Vogel. She worked for the little nursing there and down there, and she making decent money. But she would always, people here at the back door say, "Rob, come here. Say, "Mom, what you want?" Go take my check to the store. And she was trying to plant a seed. I don't know what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Take my check to the store and bring my change back. And bring me some little groceries. Because then these building was here, this building was here with one of them. Store by the corner was giving them credit.
Mm-hmm.
Let them come in and buy their groceries and pay them when they get the check. She would do it every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still running crazy. I was running crazy.
But you were responsible enough to take her check
because
and do what you were supposed to do.
That was the only thing, because that my mama would whoop my butt if I would spend that money.
Mm-hmm.
And I would fold it up tight so I wouldn't do anything. And I would put it in my pocket, I would wrap it up, and I would put my, I would be nervous.
So something inside of you wanted to do better.
Wanted me to do better.
But you didn't realize that.
But I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready yet. I had to go 2 blocks away to get that message from my mama. I mean, he had a woman 2 blocks away from the house that told me, she said, "Do you know your mama praying for you every day and you out there doing that foolishness?" I'm like, wow. And I come back and I saw a guy get shot. And that weekend this guy gets shot. I get beat down by 7 guys in front of my mama house. So I goes inside the gate stumbling. She said, "Let me tell you something." She said, "Tomorrow, this happened on a Sunday, tomorrow being a Monday." She said, "You either going to jail or you going to get some help. And you get your butt in there." She took a hold of my life.
That's a mama for you.
She took completely a hold of my life because I was lost. And when I woke up the next morning, I went to a place right across in Pineville, it's called a product. And I went to that day treatment program, and I was thin in the whip. I was high behind telegram poles. I was small, face sunk in. I mean, I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
All my soul was gone. So they sent me to Briscoe in Lake Charles to a treatment center back in 89. And that forever changed my life. Because I never seen anybody. I never detoxed before.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the first day, I'm good, I'm getting the feel, I'm starting to eat. The third day, I got full, I couldn't eat anymore because I was not eating 3 square meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any taste buds. Cocaine had numbed all my body. So after the fourth or fifth day, I started feeling a little bit better. And it just happened that I went to treatment around November of 89, and they were sending people home for Thanksgiving, sending people home for Christmas. And it was like, "Robert," the counselor said, "Robert, you want to go home for Christmas?" I said, "I don't think so."
Mm-hmm.
Because I've done that before. I came home out the Air Force. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I don't think I need to go home." "Well, it's gonna be a couple of people in here after Christmas. You might have to leave on the 26th. I don't care. But going home was not an option for me. So
mm-hmm.
I gave him my little strength, and so 2 days after Christmas, I actually came back to my mom's house, but I had a structure that I never had before.
Mm-hmm.
Treatment center taught me how to say no. I knew how to say, "Yeah, give me some more,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know how to say no. Now, I was thinking that the treatment centers didn't work, because when I see people go to treatment, it was right back there with me.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't doing what they were suggesting for you to do. See, they had a program lined up for you to work the program. Not for it to work, but you wanted to work it when things get rough, tough, or whatever. But they had a program lined up for you to work it. If you started applying it and then working it, you can apply it in your life, in all areas of your life. But that saying no was the main catch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I came home and my mama, she welcomed me back with open arms. She said, "What you gonna do tomorrow?" I said, "It ain't promised." I said, "I wake up tomorrow." I said, "But I plan on walking out this neighborhood, finding me a meeting." And what she did was she had cooked me a meal. I always tell this to people because it's very important. She cooked me a meal, and it was red beans and rice, fried chicken, cornbread, and red Kool-Aid in a glass. I ate that food, and I told Mama, I said, "I don't want dope no more. I don't want crack." I said, "I got my taste back. You know, so that set my journey out, because I walked out the neighborhood the next day. I came out my door, and of course, they all around the gate. They saw me come back.
Mm-hmm.
So but my mama did something.
You're going to pick up where you left.
Yeah, because my mama did something for me that night. She did that night. See, I couldn't sleep in my room because everybody in my room was occupied.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you sleep on that couch out there by the window.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why she made me do that, because they were still out there doing what they was doing right outside that gate.
Oh, okay.
And I always used to be out there. Hey, hey, come here, hey, come here, hey, hey. All night, I couldn't sleep.
My goodness.
I told Mom, I said, I know why you did that. And I said, I appreciate it. Because that was me out there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got out the gate the next day, and they were coming to me, some of my friends, they was my friends
mm-hmm.
that I got out with, that I was used to being around. They would come, man, you want some of this? I said, no, not today, maybe tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up here by this building. And somebody was smoking, it was smoking crack. And I smelled it. And it smelled like a skunk. And I said, man, what is that smell? He said, man, that's that crack. Oh my God. I couldn't believe I was smoking it. But then I realized that there's a God. There is a God, he can make a world out. So I walked all the way to the Payless store. You have a Payless on Bowen Avenue.
Yeah.
You said, go out, blah, blah, all the shoes from there. So I walked to the Payless store, and behind there, they used to have a meeting.
A
12 o'clock noon meeting.
Oh, okay.
So I walked over there to that building, walked in to my first meeting. That is, I was nervous. Wow, I was nervous. It's like I was there right there right now. And it was a bunch of people in there. And they were talking about things that I couldn't really relate at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized this is where I need to be a part of. Because I met my cousin. My cousin, who I've been looking for a while, he was actually in the meeting too, named Philip. And he said, man, I've been clean for about 6 months and something like that. I said, man, I just got out of treatment. He said, well, it's a blessing because we've been trying to make some meetings. So we tag team. That was my lifeline.
Support. Mm-hmm.
We supported each other, you know, and we started making meetings. They suggested you make 90 meetings in 90 days, so we made well over the amount.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't focused on getting a job. I couldn't hold no money. You know, I'm immune to crack. If I put crack in my hand right now, I might not smoke it today, tomorrow, or a year from now, but I promise you, I'm going to smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
So, while I put it in my hand, I'm immune to medicine. I can't take medicine. I gotta take it as the doctor tell me to take it, or I take the whole bottle.
Even now.
Even today, my wife would say, oh, well, you don't take medicine. Haven't taken one in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
God has blessed me not to be really sickly.
Mm-hmm.
I've become sick. I guess he wanted me to get that sickness out so he could put something good inside of me. And something real quick, I walked out the neighborhood one day, and you'll be surprised what signs it. So I walked all the way out of here, and I walked all the way down to Rapids Avenue. I walked because I had to get out of the neighborhood. It talks about changing people, places, and things. It don't say it in the book, but in the treatment centers and stuff you go to, they say you got to change people, places, and things.
Right.
And the cold part about it, the people, places, and things was my family.
So how are you going to change them?
Wow. How am I going to change the people that I love and the places and the things that I love?
When it's your family.
When it's your family. So I walked down there and I looked on the sign. It had a glass company on that corner. And on that billboard it said, alcohol is a drug too. Because I was contemplating and drinking. Because I was thinking, well, I ain't so great no more. I still sit there and go, come on now. I'm thinking like the average person gonna think. I mean, I can sit there and drink. But they say alcohol is a drug too. So, I mean, abstinence from all my alternate chemicals. So a lot of people get it twisted today. They might go to this side of town and be comfortable with doing this over here and go over and be comfortable. But guess what? You gotta be free from
all of it.
Everything to thy own self be true. And that's what I have to be today. Every single day that I wake up, I have to be tomorrow and something true.
So it's actually one day at a time.
One day.
Every day.
And you live in that day now to the fullest.
To the fullest.
Because you're free.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm free today. And I'm free. I'm not. At one point, I couldn't come back into the neighborhood. So what I did was, when I first got clean and I got, I was trying to get me a job, right? It wasn't panning out good. But my brother, he would always give me like around the first of the month when he get these big old checks, you know. You know, even he got burned. He get all type of money. So I'm gonna give you the money. So I would be depending on that to help me pay through the bodily hygiene stuff, whatever. And this is what he did to me one day. And this will really set me off from him for like 2 years. He picked me up at my mom's house and brought me to his house.
That was your hero.
That was my hero. He picked me up, brought me to his house with his wife and my brother and whatever. So we and his friend. We go in the house. I'm clean now. We go through the back door. They bust our pipes. Fresh shooters. Crack. Without letting know. It's gonna be a while before I see you again. When I walked in the back door with them and they started doing what they wanted to do, I walked straight through the back door to the front door and I walked out. It was 2 years later before he saw me again.
Because you couldn't go back
to
that place.
I couldn't go back. I had to find what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you don't love your family.
Don't mean I don't love them.
Right, but you have to take a different
I had to love myself, you know, more.
And do you think that you could have done any of that without God's strength?
No. No way possible. And God is love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
What made you realize you couldn't do it without God?
The meetings. They brought me closer to my power to Chicago the other day. I'm telling you, I was Baptist for 25 years clean. I'm Catholic now. It took me that long to find my relationship, my connection to God, and that's how I found it.
Mm-hmm.
Through these rooms and then going to different churches. But I want to give credit to my mother-in-law. I got to give it to her because she sent me. Well, she was sitting in the front of the church, and we were sitting in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my non-wife. I said, "Why are we in the back of the church? Why your mom was sitting in the front?" So I went to the front and I got the message. So, and once I got the message, I was like, wow.
You were empowered then.
That means I want to serve him. I want to serve him, you know, more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have to go back to the trenches. That's my assignment. See, my assignment is, my God gave different people tasks.
Mm-hmm.
One of my tasks is, not being afraid to talk to that guy who on Mojo.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be afraid to talk to
him. Because you know what it's like.
Because I know exactly where it's like.
Mm-hmm. And you know exactly what he's dealing with. So you can reach that person.
And I can relate.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, you know, being clean and holding on to that clean time, why? You can't hold on to that knowledge. You have to get that knowledge away.
No way.
It was freely given to you. So why would you give it? Why would you not give it away? You could be in the meeting all day long. It doesn't matter. But you still have to do some service work when you leave that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you either got to get somebody to ride, call somebody. My phone will never stop ringing. Because it's always somebody on the other end of that phone who needs some words of encouragement. You know, you might say shake bag. I call it shake bag. And we talk about this all the time. I do. I know I talk about it every day. You know, you don't have to be sober, you know, to talk to me. Because I was once like you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never forget where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
God knew us a long time ago. He loved us enough to allow us to be born. He loved us enough to allow Jesus to come. Jesus loved us enough to die for us. It would be a disservice to Jesus not to love ourselves after all he went through for me and you. God elevated us by loving us. Jesus elevated us by dying for us. The Holy Spirit elevates us by living inside.